Good morning, and you are listening to 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo, bringing you your community stories. Happy Saturday, and hope your Saturday is as beautiful as mine. Finally, we have the sun shining. It's been a while. And for those of you who had a late night with the Raptors game, they won. It was great. And let's kickstart this day on a high note and hope you all grabbed your coffees, your tea, your smoothies, whatever it is that gets your morning going. And we will be in studio live this morning in conversation with Rashmi on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo, bringing you your community stories. Today, my guest in studio has been an avid runner for over 40 years. Lloyd Smith, he began directing races in 1987 and has had a reputation of organizing quality events, a long history of race innovation, and a dedication to the community. A family effort since conception, the organization is dedicated to building a strong, healthy, and connected community in Waterloo region through the sport of running and the attitude of giving back. Thank you, Lloyd, so much for joining me in studio this morning and being here.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So you've been a runner yourself for a really long time. How did this journey even begin?
Well, I started running way back in high school. That's where it all started. It's been, over 40 years. It's hard to believe.
Yes, it is. Wow, that's a long run. And, you know, you've been active in the community as well, organizing all these runs. So how did Run Waterloo happen?
Well, it started, I think, back in 1978 with the first Waterloo Classic. When I was in high school, there was not a lot of opportunities to race on the roads.
Okay.
And there was a buzz in the community that this new race was starting in Waterloo on Father's Day, the Waterloo Classic, in June of 1978, and I actually participated in that event as a 16-year-old.
That's so cool.
And it made quite an impression on me with 1,000 runners on the street. It was just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had the opportunity to become the race director in 1987, I jumped at the chance, and I was only going to organize it for 2 years, and then I just kept going, and now it's been 33 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And Run Waterloo also organizes different kind of runs for different charities. And so how was the conception of this whole run come about? Because I know your family has been a part of this, you know, wonderful organization. So where did it begin?
Well, it began with the Waterloo Classic. That's our flagship event.
Okay.
We organized just the one event for about 10 years. And then because of the incredible demand for running, it's such a popular and great sport that we started putting on other events as well throughout the year. It's not just a summer run. We have runs throughout the year, the winter or the fall. And we just kept adding races, and we're up to about 19 races a year now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's awesome. And Waterloo Classic is Waterloo Region's oldest and longest 10K race, I hear. So, and they're celebrating, what, their 42nd?
42nd year this year. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's taking place when?
Next Saturday, June 16th,
at
University of Waterloo Columbia Ice Fields, expecting over 1,000 runners.
That's wonderful. And it's a Father's Day tradition that began years back and still going strong.
Yeah.
You bring families and, you know, running community together on this big event. So how has community played a part? Like, I know this initiative was started as a part of giving back to the community. So how has that played a role in this whole event?
Well, when you get a bunch of runners together, runners are a very generous group. Not only do they participate in the events, but they can support many different causes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you pick a cause, the runners are very generous and they can support it. They can raise money and exposure for different charities. And we jumped at that opportunity to grab that bunch of runners, that huge, enormous, generous group, and just raise money for different charities. And we've picked probably 70 different charities over the years.
And
we've raised over $1.7 million to the local community over the past 30 years or so.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Wow, that's very, you know, it's something you're giving back to the community in a huge way.
Definitely.
So One other thing I want to ask is the event that's happening on the Father's Day run is also supporting a women's sport initiative. The funds are being raised for that. How did that come about?
Well, we were looking for a new venue for the Waterloo Classic. We could not use University Stadium anymore due to LRT construction, mm-hmm. unfortunately. So we were looking for a new venue. We partnered with University Waterloo. In discussions with them, they approached us with the opportunity to raise funds for the University of Waterloo Women's Sport Initiative Fund.
Okay.
And that fit in well with what we're trying to accomplish. And we've chosen that charity for a number of years now. And this is another opportunity to raise money for female student athletes to support them in their ambitions and goals to further their competitive athletic careers.
That's great. And for those of you listening in, what does your donation mean? It's by supporting Women's Sport Initiative Fund, you make these experiences possible for female coaches. And you also give student athletes the opportunity to compete at the national and international levels, which, you know, boosts their confidence and motivates them to excel. So when they are recognized for their achievements, you also help them travel to receptions and other special events, creating memories that they'll treasure for years to come. And this event is the perfect place to start with that. And those of you who are, you know, not aware, Columbia Field is on University of Waterloo campus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the date is June 16th. And the first race starts at?
All three races.
Okay.
Races will start at 8:30.
8:30?
The 3K, the 5K, and 10K will be a mass start at 8:30.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there's all three races. So the people can pick which one they get into. Okay, that's wonderful. And all the funds raised will be for the Warriors Athletes and Recreation at the University of Waterloo. And it would be for the Women's Sports Initiative Fund. And if you need to register, where can they go to register for this run?
Well, most of the entries nowadays are online. So you can register online at runwaterloo.com up until Wednesday at 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
After that, you can drop into Runner's Choice and fill out a paper entry form. And we'll be having registration and kit pickup at Runner's Choice in Waterloo on Friday and Saturday prior to the run. And then on registration on Sunday morning prior to the run up until about 8 o'clock in the morning as well.
Oh, that's great. And if others need, you know, forms to register, you can always email me. I have some of the registration form myself. And you can email me on air. It's ONAIR with Rashmi@gmail.com. And is there anything else you would want our listeners to know about the run, Lloyd?
Sure. A lot of people are intimidated by runs when you get 1,000 people out. But if you can overcome that and come down, there's a lot of people there of varying abilities. There's runners, joggers, walkers, families of all ages and abilities. Don't be intimidated. Come on out. Have a great time. We'll treat you well.
That's great. And those of you listening, we are live on air at CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. And Lloyd was just talking about Run Waterloo's Waterloo 10K Classic. It's on June the 16th at the Columbia Ice Field, University of Waterloo. So sign up online or you can email me on air with rashmi@gmail.com. Thank you so much, Lloyd, for coming in and sharing with our listeners this great work that you and your organization has been doing for over the years. And all the very best for the Waterloo 10K run.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. For those of you who have just tuned in, you are listening to In Conversation with Rashmi live in studio on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo, bringing you your community stories. You can also listen to us live online on radiowaterloo.ca. If you have a story to share or want to advertise a sponsor, you can email onairwithrashmi@gmail.com. My next guest here, she is quite well known in our community, Carolina Miranda. She is an educator, Certified by the Ontario College of Teachers, she holds a Master's of Education from Nipissing University. She is one of the main organizers of the first Waterloo Region's Women's March in 2018. And she is also the creator and co-founder of Feminine Harbor, a social profit that promotes education, storytelling, and the arts by women in order to foster female leadership. She also created The Light Stories. It's a platform for women of diverse backgrounds to come together and share their stories. Feminine Harbor also hosts reading circles every season where important female authors are read and discussed. She's a writer, and some of the most recent essays and poetry can be found in the Anthology of Social Justice and Intersectional Feminism, organized by Dr. Catherine Sark, and which officially was launched on International Women's Day 2018 in Victoria, BC. Wow, that's quite an achievement. It's an absolute pleasure and joy to have you here, Carolina, live in studio. Thank you so much for coming and joining me here.
Thank you so much, Rashmi.
Yes, and we've known each other for a while now, and still your journey just fascinates me, and I'm sure the listeners are quite curious as well to know where and how it all began. So you immigrated to Canada from Brazil in 2003. What was that like?
Well, actually, I want to backtrack just a little bit because it's even more interesting than most people know. When I was 8 years old, I turned up to my parents and I said, one day I'm going to live in Canada.
And, wow.
And my mom laughed and she's like, yeah, sure. So don't doubt your children. Trust them. They know. They know, you know. So here I am. I moved here in 2003 was actually when I immigrated because I got married then and my ex-husband is Canadian, but I actually have had a very long relationship with Canada. The first time I came here, it was 1996, and I came as an exchange student.
Oh, wow.
And I lived in the Cayuga, Caledonia area. And so, you know, I've been flirting and loving this land for a very long time. It's been, I joke around, I say, you know, I haven't found the love of my life yet, but Canada certainly... played that role and played that part. I love this country so much, and I have loved it for most of my life. And I think what attracted me to Canada, to be quite honest, was the landscape. It was... For a little girl growing up in Brazil, I was born in Rio de Janeiro, which is a very lush, beautiful, mountainous beach area. Mm-hmm. And that's where I grew up. But I think I must have seen something at a National Geographic somewhere along the way. And then the safety and the idea that I had of a society that was much more fair than mine. Because that's what you see from the outside, you know, until you live and then you realize there are issues within that society too, and you grow up to understand the dynamics of it as an adult.
Yeah.
But I think growing up, it was that, you know, vision of, wow, there's a place out there that is gentle and that I can flourish as a woman and that is beautiful and allows me to be connected to nature in a way that... Brazil already at that time the urbanization was sprawling and taking over a lot of the places that I loved. So
yeah. So you came to Canada in 2003 and leaving the roots behind and moving to a new country is a tough journey in itself.
Yeah.
So those emotions that you carried with you moving in here, that must have been hard too. Like I know a lot of people, you know, who immigrate to Canada for whatever reason. It takes a while before you settle in, fall in love with the place, make those connections, connect with the people. How was your journey on that platform?
It was interesting because I moved because of my then husband. I had someone who was my family, right? Like me, we were a couple, and I didn't realize it. A lot of that was dormant for a very long time. Like I think I put a lot of hopes into that marriage, and I didn't understand all that I had left behind until that marriage got dissolved about 5 years ago. And And that's when it really hit me how little I had brought with me or how much I lacked. And because up until then, like for 10 years that I was married, I was trying the best I could to hold on to the family that I was forming here.
Mm-hmm.
But when that kind of disappeared, a lot of my sense of self and direction and my understanding of who I was disappeared with it, as a lot of women who go through divorce know, right?
Yes.
And that's when it really, the journey really began of taking my own roots here. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the, you know, it was within that time, these last 5 years, that I created Feminine Harbor, even with the intention, realizing through the research that I did, you know, with my master's, how severed the world is and how these circles of women who surround mm-hmm. us through our childhood, our grandmothers and our mothers and our aunties, how all of that gets broken by the incredible, you know, there's a journey of women that is happening right now in the world. And we're not talking about that journey. Mm-hmm. Like women are immigrating.
Yes.
And then they're severing these circles that are very important for human society, for our survival. They're circles of safety, love, nurturance, care.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I found myself without any of those references, because then I didn't have my ex-husband's family to rely on either, it really took a toll on me. And, you know, I was very lost and depressed for a while. And mm-hmm. I just needed to do something about it. And I mm-hmm. knew it had to be something structured. This is a very structured country.
It is.
So I didn't want to be disrespectful. So I just wanted, but I still wanted to create something that brought my voice and my knowledge of what I do believe is crucial for our children, for our communities.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And in moving here and, you know, having a life here at the beginning of it, you also have two beautiful girls
yeah.
with you, your daughters.
Yeah.
And I have seen you, you know, communicate to them, and they are wonderful young ladies. Mm-hmm. And what's being a single mother now and raising those girls to be strong women,
mm-hmm.
how does that role play into all of, you know, your journey that you
absolutely
have carried on?
So my daughters were born here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge thing. When I got divorced, I realized there's no way I can go back to Brazil. This is their home,
mm-hmm.
and their father lives here, and I would never take my daughters away from their father. He's mm-hmm. their father, right? So to me was the biggest question was then how do I surround my daughters with the women that I can't replace in their lives? Like, or, mm-hmm. you know, I need to find a way to surround them with aunties and grandmother figures and women they can look up to beyond me. Because to raise a strong young woman, I think we don't, you know, we have to start realizing as women, as mothers, we're not enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my daughters, they look up to me, yes, and I'm grateful that they do and that we have such a wonderful relationship. But truthfully, I have to give them enough space and enough role models and surround them with enough role models around them so that they have choice. Because they may not, I mean, down the road, they may not want to be a mother.
Mm-hmm.
They may not want to have anything to do with education.
Yes.
And they may want to be a scientist, or they may, you know. And so I realized I need to form wide circles around them of women that I respect mm-hmm. and that I admire, no matter who they are, whether they're stay-at-home moms or it doesn't matter. But as long as there's a criteria there of women of resiliency, women of great morals and strong, you know, goals, whatever yes. they are,
mm-hmm.
so that my daughters can grow up with these strong women around them.
As role models.
As role models.
Yeah.
And that's a huge part of Feminine Harbor, even though they're still too little to attend to mm-hmm. To the work that I do. But these women become my friends. And so they come and go from my house. And
yes.
so they see them, right?
And that's important because, again, we don't have those family ties mm-hmm. that we've left behind. And
exactly.
it's the circle of people that we are connected with, right?
Yeah.
We build that relationship with.
Excellent. And exactly. It's just intentionally rebuilding these connections
mm-hmm.
through a process of realizing how immigration can break those
yes.
those circles, right? So how do we rebuild them intentionally and build community around that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, you have also, you know, you went on to be an educator certified.
Yeah.
And you teach kids.
Mm-hmm.
And being a teacher, a mom, and trying to balance those two lives, how is that, how has that changed you, or how has that kind of given you that platform to say, okay, I know the system is this way, but yet I have two girls I have to raise in a certain way, and I have to bring my culture in, but I have to put, it's a big mix, right? It's like, it's a lot on your plate, but it's also a challenge because you are I wouldn't call that fighting the system, but you are trying to protect them at the same time. So that's a tough place to be in.
I'm not fine. I just have to, I always say, I don't want to fight the system. I just want to humanize the system. I want to enlarge the system a little bit, just to make it a little bit more human.
Yes.
But so I think, first of all, and I am very forthcoming about that because, I don't like people to create false expectations. There's no Wonder Woman, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not a Wonder Woman. My ex-husband and I, we share custody evenly. So I do have my daughters just for 50% of the time, right? Mm-hmm. And that gives me 50% of time on my own. And I think the biggest thing, it was realizing early on in my journey of being a single mother, wow, suddenly I have all this time. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do with this time? And so I can make some poor choices or, dive into depression, or I can take this time and build something beautiful with it and create something that it amplifies, community around them. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what it was really what served as medicine for me, like as a way to heal. It was like, okay, then I'm going to heal through my pain and I'm going to push and create something beautiful out of it.
And that's when you became the creator and founder of Feminine Harbor. Mm-hmm. So tell our listeners what Feminine Harbor is. It's such a strong platform for so many people in this community.
Yeah, thank you. I hope it is. So Feminine Harbor is an idea I had actually well back. Like I thought of it for the first time when I was like about 10 years old. I had like the glimpse of it.
Wow. You planned a lot very early.
I'm telling you, trust your children. And then after that, it came back when I was 19. And then it came back again when I was 20. When I was 26, I actually created a blog in Portuguese called Porto Feminino, which is the seed for Feminine Harbor. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 34, I just realized, wow, that name is still there. And it's such a good name. It's not going anywhere. And the idea, even just the title, Feminine Harbor, is harbor is essentially historically and culturally something that we think of very masculine, right? Like it's a place where the conquerors went to meet. But it's also a place of diversity, great diversity and safety, because that's where the sailors and I, my grandmother's Portuguese and you in Brazil, you're very mixed. Like my great grandmother was indigenous. My grandma's Portuguese.
Wow.
One of my aunts is black. So all of that runs into my family. Mm-hmm. So you learn to be a part of the colonization and also a part of the colonizer. It's crazy. But the harbor itself is a place of gathering. It's a place of where people meet, and it's also a safe place. So I wanted to create something that took that back, that structure back, but in a way that women felt like they were, it's their harbor, right? Like, and the idea of also harbor bringing diversity. I think we talk a lot about culture and diversity in society nowadays, but we don't realize how there's a finesse and a different nuance to it when it's about women. Just talking about cultural diversity misses the point of really talking about the diversity that comes with being a woman and childbearing choices, right?
Yes.
So women who may choose to have children, women who may not choose to have children, women who have mixed marriages and their children look different than they are.
Absolutely.
Which is the case with my mother. Like my mother is a brown woman and I'm a very white passing woman. Mm-hmm. And all of that has consequences in our lives and in how we experience diversity. So I really wanted to amplify that conversation to the experience and bring that conversation to the experiences of women and make it more specific. So I created that platform as a platform. So Feminine Harbor is like the platform that is a big umbrella.
Okay.
And within that we have like the light stories and we have reading circles. And it's a social profit that way. And then sort of to specifically honor the stories, I wanted to create something sweet and beautiful, and it's called The Light Stories. And again, playing with that imagery of light being the light in the harbor, right? Like when the ship is sailing at night and you need to find that light. So the light stories, I invested a lot of time studying The Moth, which is a storytelling platform in New York City that is very well known, and it's been around for almost 20 years now.
Okay.
And I based a lot of my work off their work.
Okay.
And some other storytelling platforms out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I just sort of wanted to tailor mine to issues of women. Yeah.
And this platform, The Light Stories, it's also a safe place for women to share and open up to things they probably have never spoken about before.
Mm-hmm.
And in so the women who they reach out to you or you reach out to them, what is the message that mm-hmm. you're trying to convey to the people who are listening about, you know, what this platform is about?
So the light stories, and there's a little bit of again, like write the story within the story.
Mm-hmm.
Light in Portuguese, which is my original language, like with the language I grew up with. So when we talk about women giving birth in Portuguese, we always say like they gave light, like dar a luz is how we
okay.
refer to birth.
Yes.
So there's that added element there too.
Mm-hmm.
And what light means in our organization is light is an acronym because I'm a teacher. Teachers love acronyms.
Yes.
It was really a good way to structure. I thought, okay, this is great. I did a lot of this through my Master's of Education because I was studying female leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So light means love, integrity, guidance, humanity, and trust. And
beautiful.
So, yeah, it's quite human, I think.
It is
it's
beautiful.
Quite lovely. And so each one of the events is anchored in one of these words from the acronym. So we have an event, for example, coming up on June 20th
of
this
okay.
month. Yeah. And we can talk a bit more about that specifically. Sure. But that one is the one on humanity.
Okay.
And I always schedule them, again, just in terms of my background, I always schedule them around the solstice and equinox.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I always joke, like, I'm not a witch, people, I'm not trying to, you know, like, don't worry. But it's a way to honor the natural cycle of the earth and when the earth changes and shifts light.
Mm-hmm.
So when the equinox and the solstice, they happen, it's a shift in the light.
Yes.
So, you know, I just thought, oh, this is really poetic. I'm also a poet. And just to sort of bring all of that poetry and that scientific piece to something that is beautiful, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the events, they run once every 3 months around the solstice and equinox. So we start with in March with the trust one. Then we move to humanity in June. Then we move to guidance in the fall in September.
Mm-hmm.
And then we move to integrity in December. And I always say love is the one that binds it all together. It's always present, ever present. And it's also a reference. The L is also a reference for something that I wrote about lyrical leadership. Like
mm-hmm.
women lead with love and they lead with beauty, really, usually, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's sort of all there.
That's beautiful.
Mm.
So in you just mentioned about it here, you also write poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So was that again a childhood thing? Did that start early on?
I know, right? There's so much that starts early on. I do believe, and I teach children because I love the way they know so much who they are,
mm-hmm.
and we just don't trust them.
Yes,
and, you know,
we brush that to the
yeah.
side and say, "Oh, you know, that's
yeah.
not it."
Or
it's
we
sad.
Or we rush them, or we rush their processes,
mm-hmm.
right? Or we don't value it as a society what they can bring. So, the poetry piece, I remember journaling a lot, but I hated journaling, to be honest. But my dad, he was a writer, but not published, but he,
mm-hmm.
he always wrote a lot of poetry, and he always infused me with poetry. And
beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. It's a complicated, with my dad's complicated relationship, it's how he knew how to love. He knew how to give me books.
Okay.
So, you know, he's not a very vulnerable person. He has a hard time being vulnerable himself.
Okay.
And so the way to communicate love and beauty is by he reads something beautiful and then
mm-hmm.
he gives it to you.
That's lovely.
So it was my way of staying connected. And then, it formed me and formed how I shape words and how I see words. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And your poetry was launched on International Women's Day. Tell me about that.
Oh, no, that was an anthology. I was very, very blessed to be asked to be a part of it. And I have poetry written all over. I write poetry on social media, and I don't have anything binded with all of my poetry yet, but you know, I've participated in the KW poetry slam, not in the slam, but I did read some of my poetry there.
Mm-hmm.
I've read some of my poetry on my own stage at Feminine Harbor. I have some of my poetry out on and I do have some published. I'm not, you know, I do so many things at once.
Yes, you are a multi-talented person. How do you get that time to put it all together?
I have 50% of the time off, right? Like, and then you learn how to use it really well once you have children. It's like, okay, this time I need to use it really well. But I think the poetry is really just an outlet. Sometimes I haven't written in a long time, but it's an outlet for some things that I just need to say them in a beautiful way. Mm-hmm. I try to be mindful of how I, you know, I am a feminist, don't get me wrong. I'm, you know, very blunt about being a feminist and women's rights. But I also think we need to carry a lot of beauty with us, otherwise we become just as angry as the oppressor, and mm-hmm. I don't want to be that person. So sometimes if I have something that is really angry at me and I'm going, okay, I'm going to make an effort at putting this out, but it's going to come out beautiful because mm-hmm. I'm going to be better than that, mm-hmm. you know? And so some of my poetry is just some of the things that are either hurting or that are very angry, and I just want to put it out there, but I don't want to cause more damage or mm-hmm. more hurt. And so, yeah.
So does that help you release your, you know, emotions and yeah. then help you move on to the next stage when you do that?
Absolutely.
Because yeah. that I find is also so important, right? People hold on to so much so strongly, and you just have to find ways to let it go.
Absolutely. It's actually, it touches a bit on the lyrical leadership piece that I haven't really talked about this much. I haven't written much about it, but I did write in my thesis, in my master's, and I started there. I think, you know, leadership is something that we have to re-examine and rethink. And a lot of the times we lead, or thus far, our understanding of leadership is very linear.
It is.
You know, and we tend to praise those leaders who get things accomplished and they get it done and they get it done, mm-hmm. but at what cost along the way?
Yes.
And so lyrical leadership, the concept of lyrical leadership is that if you don't lead with beauty, then that means you're missing out. You're leading in a linear way, and that linear leadership I'm not interested in anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I need to see that along the way, you're creating beauty, you're in your leadership, you're conscious and aware of community, you're conscious and aware of your consequences. And so, you know, I find that the arts, so poetry or music, it slows down our thinking enough to give us some perspective,
mm-hmm.
to give us a better, deeper understanding of what it really is that we want to say so that it doesn't come out linearly.
Yes.
And then once it does come out, then we have buffered that anger a little bit mm-hmm. through beauty mm-hmm. and grace, right? Yeah. And so that's why it's so important for me to stay connected to the arts and to poetry and to visual arts. I mean, when you go to the Light Stories now at the KW Art Gallery, we have a little tour of the gallery half an hour before the Light Stories, which is wonderful. Crystal Morey, she's one of the greatest curators in Canada right now, mm-hmm. if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
And she does a beautiful job giving people a tour. And that slows that process down of understanding the issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
So beauty and arts and, in you know, music, it just slows our thinking down so that we can create in different ways before we get to the point that we need to get to.
True.
But with you know, with a higher purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important to start talking about lyrical leadership. It's like, how, if you're going to lead, how are you leading? And who are you leading? And where are you taking them? And how are you taking them? Because if it's linearly, then you're missing out on a lot of things.
You are. Mm-hmm. And you are also very passionate about women's rights and, you mm-hmm. know, women equality and stuff like that. And you started the first Women's March
mm-hmm.
in 2018. So how did that come about?
Yeah, I didn't start. I was actually Sarah Bigman, she's my friend, and she was the executive lead for the national Canadian Women's March.
Yes.
And she said, hey, because I actually went to, so I went in 2017, I went to the Women's March in D.C.
Okay.
The original one.
The big one.
The mothership.
Yes, the mothership.
Of all of them. And I was there. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And so because I was there, when we came back to Canada, I was tapped on the shoulder and said, hey, would you like to put this together in KW? And I was like, not really. I have enough as it is. But sure.
Why not?
Why not, right? And it was very funny, actually. And this is speaks to the power of social media, and it speaks to the power of technology, because when it all happened, I was actually traveling in Europe for 2 weeks. I organized the whole thing from there.
Wow.
I know.
Oh, and my. Social media.
Social media is so powerful.
It is.
If you use it correctly, right?
Exactly. You got to know how to use it,
I
right?
I know. So I basically said, okay, yes, I will organize. But do you guys realize I'm going to be away visiting family in Europe, because that's where my brother is? And it was crazy. Like, I would wake up 2 a.m. in the morning there to meet with people online here. And I just held everybody that I thought I knew that were confident, strong role model women here in this community. And I tapped, it was very bold. Like, I tapped, you know, counselors that I had briefly met, and I knew them from Facebook, but I was like, well, I'm going to message you. And the beautiful thing is that all these women, we tend to look up to these women, like Catherine Fife was one of them, for example. And we think they are unreachable because, you know, the structures. But if you are fighting for the same things that they are fighting for, and you contact them, and they may just read, like Catherine, for example, she redirected me to the proper channel. She's like, oh, I would love to, but please email this so that you can talk to my person, right?
Yes.
These women are all very open to being a part of the change. Bardish Chagger, I reached out to her because I knew her from a few years back at the Empty Space. She's born here in this community. And she said yes, you know, like, so suddenly, and I had all my, and the interesting thing I think with me is that I navigate many different circles. Like, because I'm an educator, I have a very wide open, like, I have a lot of outreach. Like, I hang out with the artists. The politicians also respect me because I'm an educator. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, different circles.
Yes, and you build those connections over time.
So I just tapped into friends, to be honest. And they all said yes. And then Mother Earth said yes, too. And I was, like, in agreement with her. And it was a beautiful, sunshiny, like, day that day.
Yeah.
And it all came together. And I had a lineup. And I came back from Europe a few weeks, I think a few days after it was the march, or 2 weeks after. And we pulled it together, and it was actually the biggest I heard, at least then. I don't know if the record has been broken, but it was the biggest gathering in the KW at the Zaire Square.
Oh, yes.
We had about almost 500 people, and they said, oh, we've never had that many people here.
That's so wonderful. That was pretty cool. That was cool.
Yeah.
So in doing that, how did it transform you as a woman yourself? Doing this march, seeing all these women come together, walking or running for the same cause.
Yeah.
How did that change how you look at things, or did it ever change, or did you always know this is what it is?
It has changed, definitely. I mean, you can't do those things and not be transformed and humbled.
Yes.
What I have always known to be true, because I was raised with by some incredible women in my own family, I never looked at women. I never doubt women. Mm-hmm. I grew up knowing that women are strong and fierce and courageous. And those were the women who I was raised by, right? My grandmothers and now society may not see them that way. Society, the way patriarchal society has been structured, may not have given them any room, and may have tried to suppress their powers. But it was very clear in my family that the women were powerful, even though because of the society around them, like they had to be kept more as property, right? Like it's a dynamic where you keep your wife safe and you like there is not a lot of freedom for the women in my family. But inside that household, they were strong. And so I never doubted. What I think has changed for me is that in Canada, in a country like Canada, women have the opportunity to attach themselves to the structures of power. And what really has, because my family was, even though the women were very strong, they were mostly at home. They didn't work. Like most of my grandmothers and my aunties were housewives. And my grandmother, the one grandmother, was one who worked. And then my aunt started working after that. But typically, you know, it's like it's small work. Like you're not... It was very unusual. My grandmother was the breadwinner of the family, but very unusual at the time.
At the time, yes.
Yeah. But I think what changed for me was realizing that all these women can actually access power. Mm-hmm. And once we access power, then what do we want to do with it? What are we going to do with it? And how are we going to shape the society around us? Because the other piece that I always talk about when people have conversations with me is that we have to not, we can't take for granted that just because we're women, we're not going to abuse structures of power. You know, power can corrupt anybody.
It can.
You know, and it can corrupt women too.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, why I do the work that I do with Feminine Harbor is we need to do that work of consciousness so that we maintain each other and keep each other in check.
Yes.
So we can keep it, and it has to be apolitical, that like that work needs to be human. So that we can then guide our structures to a more humane, you know, framework.
Yes.
But what I really have noticed is that there is power in organizing. There is power in respecting the structures and making them work for you and taking space in them. I am in the classroom right now, but it is my ambition to become an administrator in the school system as my career grows. Because I realize that all that power can bring about much change if it's in the right hands.
It is true. Yes.
So, you know, that's the part that I'm starting to really, you know, when you see leaders in the world like Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand and Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez in the United States, it gives me much hope that women can lead as women and take that structure back and say, no, power belongs in our hands and we're going to share
and do it right
and be committed to a sense of integrity and be committed to a sense of deep care and a sense of ethics that, you know, is so important.
It is important. And coming back to, you know, Light Stories and Feminine Harbor, where can people find that information? Like if people are looking to register for the event that's coming up in June, where can they go and find that?
Yeah, so I think their best bet is to follow our social media. We have an account on Instagram and we have an account on Facebook. You just type Feminine Harbor and we will come up. It's a beautiful pink and purple logo, like a flower, which is really like four women holding babies. Like it's misleading that way, just kind of the image. But for people, I should say, it's not really women. But I think follow our social media, Feminine Harbor at on Facebook and Feminine Harbor on Instagram, on Twitter, because we always tweet out the information. We are, our tickets are selling from Ticket Leap. Okay. So if you Google Light Stories, Ticket Leap, then you will also get to our event page. But our social media always sends out information and it has the events listed right there. And we're going to start posting closer to it too. And I have a mailing list as well. If people want to send me an email to info@feminineharbor.com. Now, Feminine Harbor, the harbor is without the U. It's the American spelling. I know. Don't blame. Don't judge me. It was just, you know, the domain when we got it. It got it that way.
That's great. And the event will also include a tour of the gallery, right?
Yes. Yeah. So the event starts at, so you buy your ticket. Tickets are $20 because, and I always like to be very transparent about that. I don't make money off Feminine Harbor. But we do take that money to pay the musicians. Again, in the intention to continue with the vision of lyrical leadership, it's very important that we start valuing and praising our artists and understanding the emotional labor that goes into playing for us. Mm-hmm. You know, when you see five songs on stage, I was an artist before I became an educator. I was an actress. Mm-hmm. You know, the amount that you spend rehearsing is huge. The amount of time that you spend memorizing things and practicing so that that 1 hour can be beautiful.
Yeah.
And we need to honor that, right? Mm-hmm. So the money that we make with our tickets, we pay the artists, mm-hmm. and you can buy them online. And what you get is you get to the KW Art Gallery mm-hmm. at 6:30. Well, get there a little earlier, but at 6:30, we offer you a tour, a guided tour curated by Crystal Morey of mm-hmm. the KW Art Gallery, which, by the way, the KW Art Gallery has been absolutely amazing to us.
It's a beautiful space.
It's gorgeous, right?
It's gorgeous, yes.
And they've basically sponsored us. They've really taken on our work and seen through our vision. And mm-hmm. they said, well, this belongs here. We want to have you here. And they've been absolutely amazing. So if you want to even, you know, I encourage people to support them because they are supporting us, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then after that tour of half hour, at 7 o'clock, we go to their community room where the light stories begin. And the light stories are a sequence of live music. So Johnny Nerita is going to be playing with us this month,
oh,
and
nice.
She's amazing. And then, you know, it's always like live music and stories, and those stories are told in different ways. Sometimes people have slideshows and they're stories about women. So the one for coming up, Humanity, we have like a woman talking about the intimacy between food and body and, you know, how our food is very sensual, and there's that mm-hmm. piece that involves our body, and we have a doula coming and talking about birthing stories. And I think essentially one of the things that I always say on our stage is, you know, women's stories are everybody's stories.
It is. I would definitely encourage men mm-hmm. and more men to come and listen to these stories.
Yes.
So they understand
of
from
course.
Where, you know, we as women come from.
Well, in them, right? I always yeah. say to men, like, this is where you come from.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if you can't remember, then we have a huge problem. We have a huge problem in the world because we can't remember where we come from.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, yeah, and it usually runs until about 9 o'clock. Sometimes you go over a little bit, but we try to wrap up around 9:30. And yeah, so that's what it is.
And reading circles, what's reading circles about? Because that's a part you've also just created too, right?
Yeah, that is very new.
Yeah.
That's very new, and it started this year. We're still like sort of in a beta format. The light stories are pretty, they run smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
We do a few adjustments here and there, but the reading circle started this year just basically because people kept asking me, like, how do you have these ideas? Like, what are you reading?
Yeah.
And I realized, well, I read women. I enjoy reading female authors. I have a bachelor's. I graduated in literature in Brazil. And I realized again in hindsight that all of the people that I was reading in my undergrad were women, because I just think it's beautiful. You know, I think what women have to say is quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to open a reading circle with mm-hmm. some of my favorite books, basically. And it's Pay What You Can. And it's me being a teacher and saying, here's why. Really, it's that simple. Like, this is why I love this book.
There you go.
The one coming up, and it's nice because it's not a reading club. You don't really need to read the book to be in our reading circle.
Okay.
I find that, you know, that adds a lot of pressure. Sometimes people feel like, oh, I didn't read all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And because I am a teacher, I'm really good at synthesizing information, relaying information, explaining it. So I take books that I love and that mm-hmm. I read and that influence me in any way.
Okay.
And I share with the community. And I say, here's why I think you should eventually consider reading this book. And
okay.
this is a book study or, you know, a mm-hmm. conversation. Or mm-hmm. And then people come with questions and they come, you know, oh, I only read half of it. And I'm wondering, like, oh, and it's really good because it's low key. So the next one coming up, and I always try to combine two books.
Okay.
The next one coming up is... One is a very thin little book that I read for my master's. I know it sounds like all geeky, but it's what shaped Feminine Harbor. It really is. It's a beautiful, thin book about female leadership in education. And then you realize, wow, there's an ecosystem going on there where women are leaders and we need to learn from that ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite lovely. And then it's paired up with Becoming by Michelle Obama.
Yes, that's a beautiful book, too.
It is a beautiful book.
It is.
It is a beautiful book.
And is there a place that people can go up and look up this information?
Yeah, again, on Facebook, we have our reading circles listed there in our events page, and it's on Frederick Street. We gather there. I forget the number or the address, but it's all there on Facebook if you check out our Facebook page.
That's great. Is there anything that, Carolina, you would like to leave our listeners with before we sign off and, you know, a message that you would, you know, not just women, but everyone listening, what is the message you would like to convey to them?
Yeah, just make space for remembering where you come from. Make space, you know, to remember and to honor not just the... We tend to rush here, to rush towards power and to rush towards achievement. And, you know, we need to start being more mindful about making space to remember why we started the quest to begin with and why did we come here. I mean, I came here for safety, for beauty, for connection. Mm-hmm. And if those values are lost, then we lose our direction. So I think we need to remember where we come from, our countries, our mothers, our motherlands, and understand what is it that we're after so we can really take charge of our journey here on.
Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your amazing journey with our listeners and also talking about Femina in Harbor. I think that's a beautiful platform.
Thank you.
And I would recommend everyone to at least attend and, you know, listen to the speakers. They have fabulous stories, at all from their heart, and it's real, it's raw. There's nothing that's, you know, scripted. It's their life, their journey that they share, and it's a beautiful platform. So again, thank you, Carolina, so much for coming in. It was wonderful having you here.
Thank you.
And next week, Saturday, June the 15th at 9 a.m., I will be chatting with Tanya Ortiz and Christine Smallman in conversation with Rashmi. Tanya is a health, wellness, and fitness coach and self-care expert. She coaches women on how-tos of unlocking and unleashing the crucial tools that are already inside you to become empowered and make vital time every day without letting guilt, fears, or excuses stop you. And my second guest, she calls what she does moment medicine. She uses combinations of guided movement and free-form movement to assist people in finding their way into sensation and therefore back home to their bodies. The focus is on following pleasure, comfort, and ease. And once a level of self-trust is reached within self, she invites people to dance on their edge, to challenge, to condition, to strengthen, to release, and to heal. Christy Smallman will take us through the different movements of Nia, Chakra Dance, and Guide Dance. You don't want to miss this conversation, so tune in to CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo or listen live online on radiowaterloo.ca Saturday, June the 15th at 9 a.m. And if you have a story or want to share it, you can always email me. It's onairwith, W-I-T-H-R-A-S-H-M-I @gmail.com. You can also follow me on Facebook in Conversation with Rashmi or my Instagram feed at CKMS 102.7 or at R-A-S-H-S-A-N-J. It's Rash Sanj. Until then, have a wonderful weekend and thank you for listening in Conversation with Rashmi.